All right. Hello and welcome to Medi-Call episode 234. I'm Corey and here's Daryl.
Yo.
Yo. Welcome back. We got to talk about the banning of Lurrus in Modern. We got to talk about Neon Destiny Dynasty. I don't know. Dynasty. I do that every damn time. Dynasty.
You do.
You know, I think we did a whole podcast. I was saying Destiny and no one caught me. So I'm sure I'm not the only one making that mistake.
I am the Scrub Lord General. If I didn't catch you, that's my fault.
Yeah, it's Daryl's fault. I've been playing some limited on that. I've been playing some historic. I love that set. That's been a blast, by the way. More so than I ever thought. And then we gotta do a little shout out to our nice sponsor, Manitraders.com. So we've got a brand new promo code. So before we get into all of that fun stuff, real quick, Card Knock Life Podcast, all one word, _7QR. All right, what do you got for that one, Daryl? 7QR.
7 Quiet Rainbows.
Okay, 7 Quiet Rainbows. Card Knock Life Podcast, _7Quiet Rainbows for 14% off your checkout, your purchase at checkout. So there you have it. You can use that to maybe go and rent a Modern deck in this brave new world of Modern after the banning of Lurrus. I think that's going to be a pretty significant change to the format. Would you say so?
Absolutely, man. Like, I'm going to read the banned and restricted announcement written by Michael Majors here. Ooh, okay. And then I'll kind of talk about what I've been seeing. So Modern, Lurrus the Dream Den is banned. Pioneer, Lurrus the Dream Den is banned. I don't know much about this. And then Hopper, some cards are banned. Disciple of the Vault, Galvanic Relay, Expedition Map is unbanned. So give some Tron love. And I'm going to read the Modern one because that's really what I've been interacting with. So since the release of Modern Horizons 2, Modern has enjoyed a period of experimentation and exploration. Despite that, Lurrus the Dream Den has remained a ubiquitous presence in the format across multiple archetypes. Lurrus's play rate, 31% of Magic online decks. This is a huge percentage, by the way.
39?
That started 31% of Modern, of Magic online league decks with 4+ wins. So leagues are 5-round tournaments. So 31% of the decks that 4-1 or better in a league had Lurrus in some form.
Yeah.
Pointed to Lurrus being a card contributing to a homogenization of the Modern play experience. There is not a significant enough deck building cost to incorporate it in a wide variety of strategies. As in the case in these larger non-rotating formats, there are already strong incentives to include as many cheap and efficient cards as possible in your deck due to format speed and a variety of other pressures. Lurrus compounds these incentives by providing a powerful additional resource that helps to alleviate the weakness of filling your deck with cheaper and often less impactful cards as the games go on. For too many archetypes, Lurrus isn't a trade-off, but purely additive. Due to play data, community feedback, and a desire to keep a diverse range of card options as possible available to players in Modern, Lurrus the Dream Den is banned in Modern.
Yep.
So I've seen Lurrus decks of all sorts of broad swaths, from Hammer to Shadow to I don't know, Darcy Pile is what I like to call it, where it's like Death Dragon's Rage Channeler and Monkey and all the like red various aggro pieces.
Yeah, even
what have you seen? A deck with like 8 creatures is playing Lurrus because it's just free. Like, you know, random combo decks that have like a bunch of cheap permanents are playing Lurrus. Like, so it's like this ridiculously grindy card that's a free resource, and a lot of these cards don't have the need for the 15th sideboard slot. So it's true. They lose literal nothing in a sideboard slot, and they've already designed their deck in a way that, you know, realistically the deck was probably just not going to have any cards that costed more than 2 as a permanent. Mm-hmm. So this was just free.
Yeah.
So we've kind of been calling for this as the overpowered companion to be banned. Kind of what does this do for the format? I think you need to see less main board graveyard hate. So like, you know, maybe you still keep a Nihil Spellbomb in your Urza's Saga package in main deck just because you can tutor it up. But, like, you don't need as much graveyard hate because Lurrus was always just leaning on the graveyard. You can start to use resources that tax your graveyard again, like Delve. And then there's this concept of, well, a bunch of cards were shadow banned by Lurrus. Basically, cards that saw play just don't anymore because Lurrus was my companion, so I couldn't play them. So like Jund decks, they didn't play Liliana anymore. They didn't play Bloodbraid Elf. You know, these black-red decks. Liliana, I think Liliana of the Veil is a big winner here. But like, are there other 3 and 4 CMC black-red cards that you can see, you know, coming back? Or white cards that come back?
K-Command.
K-Command didn't get affected because it wasn't a permanent. It's permanents. Are there any permanents? Like, Higditsu's second, or like the new Higditsu enchantment. That can see a lot of play in Modern now because, you know, there are a bunch of cheap 1-mana creatures. You can play this 3-mana enchantment, blow them all up, exile your opponent's graveyard, and then flip it into a threat. You know, like, that's a... I don't remember. It's the new Neon Dynasty card. But I just don't remember the whole name of it, but it's Higditsu, or however you say it. I think it's like Higditsu's Second Coming or something like that.
I'm on it. Keep going.
But, so like that card is a player now. So I built a nice little loam deck that was using Life on the Loam and then the new lands to try and like create some value with Tranquil Thicket and Boseiju and the black one that mills 3 and then returns a creature. And the deck was not the best against Lurrus, even though I had like a Bajuka Bog in my deck. But it was because I wasn't kind of fully fleshing out the strategy the way I wanted to, because I felt incentivized to play Lurrus. So instead of playing like Endurance or Grist or various other things that I might cast, like, you know, Liliana, I just cut all those things and played some more lands because I wanted to play Lurrus.
Yeah.
So like now you can expand out into, you know, playing things like Grist or Endurance or Tireless Tracker. You know, that's a big one. I think we'll see a lot more play now that Lurrus is kind of gone in those like mid-rangey land style decks.
Real quick, the card you're referring to is Hidetsugu Consumes All, 1 black-red, yep. Destroy each non-land permanent with value 1 or less, exile all graveyards, and then the third chapter is exile the saga, then return at the battlefield. It's a 3/3 trample. When it deals damage, put a +1/+1 counter on it. When it deals damage,
it deals 10 or more.
10 or more, they lose the game.
Yeah. But, getting rid of Lurrus kind of makes these decks sort of pick of, like, do I want to be this, like, low-to-the-ground aggressive deck? Or do I want to, like, maybe play a little more mid-rangey stuff? Like, Hammer just kind of gets weaker because they don't have their free recursion engine, but now maybe they start to play some swords in their Stone Fortress package. Stuff like that kind of becomes a reality. And two cards that I see getting the big comeback here, I think, that are the biggest winners of all this, in the Shadow and Black-Red style decks are going to be Tassigar and Gurmag Angler. Like, those cards were insanely good. Like, they were definitely played in Grixis Shadow and used them alongside Stubborn Denial, and they were just big 1-mana 4/5s and 5/5s. They were shadow banned by Lurrus that are now basically unbanned. And so do people go back to playing Gurmag Angler because you don't need to keep your graveyard intact because you don't have Lurrus anymore to dig out of it, and so you can play Gurmag Angler? Like, what compilation of those things start to come back is what I'm curious about. I haven't actually gotten any games in since the Lurrus ban, but that is kind of the cards I see as the big winners are Bloodbird Elf and Liliana, and then the two big black delve creatures.
Yeah, that's a good point. Those are cards that I haven't really thought of in a long time. I kind of forgot they existed, to be honest with you.
I would say those are some of your favorites, man. You loved Juice and Tassigar.
They really are. They are some of my favorites. But holy cow, like, I haven't seen the likes of those for a long time. I haven't seen the light of day. The likes of those. Got those two figures of speech mixed up.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about like trying to get some modern games in and seeing where the format goes. Maybe this opens the door for control a little more because they don't have to outgrind Lurrus.
Yeah.
Your opponent, your mid range opponent or your shadow opponent doesn't automatically start up a card on you. So like maybe control has a real chance to make some comeback, something like that. I'd just be interested to see where all this goes.
Yeah, and you're not wrong. Like, homogenizing the format is is like not an understatement by any means. Like 31% of decks having Lurrus as an inclusion is a big deal. That's not to be understated. Like 4-1 or better is like basically the metric for success in a league. Like if you've ever played Magic Online, like going 3-2 is just breaking even in a league. So like
you get a treasure chest, you get like $3.
Yeah, it's like basically just it would yeah. be a satisfactory result, but you would really only be happy with like a 4-1 or better. Like 5-0 is ideal, obviously, but 4-1 is just that would be quality.
Yeah, that's where you get the qualifying points for the larger Magic Online tournaments, and you also get like a higher value of chest. You get like 5 chests and 11 chests for 4-1 and 5-0 respectively. So that is where you start to hit profit. You make a little extra play points to like every 5 leagues you 4-1 or 5-0 gets you a free league.
Yeah. Having Lurrus in 31% of those decks, like even if there's just a Lurrus, which there is, right, because that's how the companion mechanic works, like the effect that has on the entire 75 cards in the deck, which includes the sideboard, right, because you're going to build your sideboard in a particular way. Either you do care about continuing to include Lurrus in games 2 and 3, or you don't. It is huge. It affects the way that you build the main board, as Daryl said. Like Tassiger and Grimmog Angler have been shadow banned by it. You know, the entire format is considering like whether or not we can play permanents that cost more than 2 mana, and that is a significant portion of the cards that were ever printed into the modern metagame. Looking at like the top 2 most represented decks in modern, both of them are Lurrus decks right now, according to Goldfish. We're looking at like 12% and 11% on Death Shadow and Hammer Time. And then going down the line, there's like pretty big representation for Burn. There's like, you know, we've got like some Jund decks up here, and the Jund decks are Lurrus decks, which is insane, knowing like the prevalence of like Liliana type strategies and Bloodbraid Elf type strategies in Jund over the years. And they've completely changed gears and are now like just Lurrus value decks. We've got Prowess and things like that. It's like the decks have completely changed. They're just Lurrus value decks with, you know, their other like their other scheme kind of tacked on to them.
Yeah, it's aggro Lurrus or mid-range Lurrus, basically.
Right, a little combo element.
And I've seen a few control Lurrus decks where they like play just like random baubles and stuff for Lurrus to pick up, and then we're control decks. Like I've seen that too.
Yeah,
so picking up Dress Down and stuff like that.
It'll be good to see it go, for sure.
Yeah, so just to kind of harp on what Corey said, 31% of decks had a Lurrus companion. So basically, if you played a league, 85% of the time you were guaranteed to play against Lurrus once. That's the math on it. The math on it is if you have a 69% chance of not playing against Lurrus and you do that 5 times, you have a 15% chance of never playing against Lurrus, which means you have an 85% chance of playing against a Lurrus, at least one, in the whole league. And Lurrus kind of comes with the same building parameters. If it's black, it's probably got Death Shadow. If it's red, it's got Darcy and Roggevan. It's always going to have Mishra's Bauble. If it's white, it's probably Hammer Time. So, like, you see the same parameters in all these decks. So you're getting kind of 85% of the time you're seeing the same, you know, 5 to 13 cards in these decks. So that's what you get for the homogenization factor, which is, you know, something I'm glad to see people get to experiment with now. So. But just, yeah, that's a huge percentage of leagues when you play thousands and thousands of leagues. It's such a small percentage of leagues that don't have to interact with Lurrus that you could sneak your brew in for a 5-0 or something like that.
But you have to keep in mind that it's 31% of 4-1 finishes. So I don't know like what percentage of like the total overall decks have Lurrus.
That's fair. You know? Yeah, so that's fair. I'm just
less, it might be more too.
I'm assuming that the 4-1 finishes kind of mimics the whole meta, right? Like maybe, if we extrapolate that onto the whole meta, this is your odds. That's kind of wild.
Yeah, well, let me, like, if I scan this modern meta game, like I'm looking at like the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I'm looking at 15 decks represented here. Of these 15 decks, like, okay, so Murktide decks are not Lurrus decks. They're decks that rely on permanents, like big permanents. These decks just don't care about this, right? They actually probably are interested in this because they don't have to worry about, like blue and red is notoriously bad at dealing with graveyards without having to like play a bunch of artifacts that can do it. So they've got like sideboard like relics and things like that. So that deck's probably pretty happy about this, right? These control decks, and these like value decks, like we've got these like blink decks, they're probably pretty happy about this.
I think the blink decks can outvalue the Lurrus deck. They just have to like survive the initial wave. But yeah, I think that they're not going to be sad that those decks have to like bury them in the first wave or they lose, like not at all.
Let's see here. I mean, like the thing is, like, how much worse does Jund get by just having to evolve into like old school Jund?
Well, I mean, the question becomes, does it evolve into old school Jund? Like, what parts of it stay and what parts of it go? Like, you know, Roggevon, I think, is here to stay. You know, I think you're going to replace some amount of, you know, is Roggevon better than Dark Confidant? Probably.
Yeah, is Bob just done for? Roggevon just is the next problem, right? Like, Roggevon is ubiquitous as hell. Like, that card...
Yeah.
Just like your Lurrus is so like, oh yeah, we're just gonna include Lurrus as this thing that my deck can also do because it's an obviously good thing to do. Like, oh, you're in red. Who doesn't like card advantage?
I mean, you have to have a good reason not to play. Yeah, you have to have a good reason not to play Roggevon.
Yeah. So if there's any other card that like costs two, like one to two mana, that like provides you any kind of advantage, like it has to be extremely powerful to boot out Roggevon. So anything like Dark Confidant is a very, very good magic card, but it's not going to see any play as long as this monkey is around.
Yeah, I mean, but it'll just be interesting to see like how much does Bloodbird Elf creep in, how much does Liliana creep in. It will be interesting to see how people evolve their decks. And I think that statement right there is a perfect pivot to the rest of the podcast, which is the evolution of competitive magic and how different it looks now.
Yeah.
You know, here in Baltimore, I'll talk to, you know, from what I see here in Baltimore, I'm near Johns Hopkins. I worked for them. They're kind of like one of the leading people in the industry in the pandemic. We're starting to soften on our concern of this pandemic being a giant problem. You know, we have very low numbers of hospitalized patients, which is great. And the Baltimore mayor has lifted the ban or the mask mandates on all of the indoors. Like, it's no longer mandatory for businesses to have indoor mask mandates. They can choose to continue to do so by their own free will and accord. That's them. But like, so we're basically back to normal functionally. But the way we consume competitive magic has changed a lot. You know, versus live was a big component from Star City that has hereafter been canceled. Basically, they let go a lot of their riders. They, you know, they couldn't justify the payment of those folks trying to put out competitive content when there wasn't much in the way of competitive scene. You know, a lot of the big tournaments have kind of fallen to the wayside. We don't see Grand Prix anymore or Star Cities. So it's kind of been replaced by online play. Arena for standard and historic being kind of pro tour format as well, and then if you want to play any sort of eternal format, you've got MTGO, and MTGO runs, you know, higher buy-in tournaments. They're 30 or 40 tickets every one or two of them every weekend for every format, Pauper included, and so, you know, they're higher, like close to Grand Prix level buy-in tournaments every, you know, two or three a weekend that you can play in for whatever format you choose. And that's kind of been the evolution of competitive magic, with on-demand, more competitive FNMs available to you in the form of a league. So we've seen the meta evolve hyper rapidly. But you know, something that I'm kind of sad about is it's taken away the gathering part of it. You know, that you don't have a good reason to go see your friends or to own paper magic cards. Like, it kind of feels real weird. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw some friends last night. We played some board games and stuff, and brought some commander decks. Didn't end up playing commander, ran out of time, but I was like shuffling through my friend's decks that he brought over, and I was like looking at some cards, and it was kind of surreal to see some of them in paper that I have been looking at on Arena for months and months and months that I have in my collection, and like I know very well, but I have like never actually seen in real life before. Like I own these cards, I played them like hundreds of times, but I've never actually held that card in my hand, and it was just like so unusual to just like be seeing them all for the first time. But that's like the way it is now. It's in like that was all by design. It was like it's so much more accessible. People can like get games played more often. People can access the cards more readily, and they don't have to go through a big box retailer. They don't have to go through the local game store. They can buy direct from Wizards when they're buying on Arena. They can partake in events by purchasing the resources, the entry direct from Wizards right on Arena. There's no middleman. It's all straight from the source, and it's completely controlled by Wizards on there. So it's like, you know, it's such an obvious more idealized alternative to doing it the old-fashioned way. But for those of us that were around for that, it's like something's kind of missing from that, and I have some nostalgia for those days of like the PTQs and all the, you know, the SCG events and things like that. It's weird to know now that, like, I don't know if it's the pandemic that has really changed that has been the biggest factor in that, or it's just the, you know, just a sign of the times, but it's a very different world now.
Well, I can definitely tell you, just kind of having worked in healthcare, that it's definitely like it's a pairing. So one led to the other. So Magic has always been like this really cool gathering. GPs are huge and they're awesome, and Star Cities are smaller than GPs but still really big and they're awesome. Like, but what happened is kind of two things started to happen. Wizards, sort of the pandemic, even right before the pandemic, Wizards kind of changed the pro player scene to make it to where pro player, like professional Magic players that could like make a living off of the pro tour, didn't really exist anymore. They created the MPL. And then the pandemic came. Yeah. So, like, you know, they took away a lot of our real life incentive to chase the dream, to, you know, play the game, see the world, was what the old Pro Tour slogan used to be. They took that away. And then the pandemic, like, dropped the axe on it to behead it. It's like, hey, you guys can't get together at all. Nobody within 6 feet of each other. Don't see another human that you don't know, that you don't live with. Like, enough of that for 2 years. Yeah, and so we were pretty resistant. You know, Magic is a game. We loved the gathering. We got together. We played games. We got outside. We saw each other. But the times, they were evolving to a point where, you know, you always have your cell phone in your hand. You can play Magic on your cell phone now with Arena. Like, you're always at a computer. You always have the internet. We're plugged in. We don't gather together as much when we don't have those things that force us out of the house. And so when the pandemic hit and pushed us all inside, people still wanted to do the thing they loved. So it just kind of, Magic also started to give in to the times of, well, I'm on my computer, I'm on my phone, like, I'm going to just do these things. And, you know, now it's kind of less enjoyable because I don't get the experience of getting to communicate with another human being and face to face and have that part of it, if you like that part, but you still get the game. And so, like, I think it's sort of the perfect storm, like you said. And now that the perfect storm has ended, it's almost like if you've ever seen coverage of a hurricane, like a hurricane hits a town and then it ends. Uh-huh. And everyone just comes out of their boarded up houses and just looks around and surveys the damage. And so now we're at the point where it's like, okay, the pandemic's pretty much over. As Magic players, let's come out of our boarded up houses and look around and say, do we really want to buy paper Magic cards? Do we want to go play in Magic tournaments? Or are we happy with what Magic has become with this digital portal, like these digital portals being the game? Like, what are we looking for at this point? And so that kind of falls to us as the consumers to make that decision and show Wizards what we really want. But it also falls to, you know, Wizards, Star City, Channel Fireball, those local game stores to open up the doors again on this and kind of make it happen. So it's kind of a two-way street.
Yeah.
They have to open the doors and we have to talk with our wallets and say we want it back. So.
Yeah, it's a little difficult to do. I think like we were talking before the podcast that I think the effect of this is I and many other players have lost a little of the passion for it without that element of the gathering, like you've said, and that whole, you know, that competitive drive, I think, is what kind of fueled us to bring that content and things like that. And I think now it feels like everyone is sort of treated like a consumer, in a way that, a consumer rather than like a participant in like this kind of, it felt more like a community, like an esport community than it does now. It feels much more like it's a constant recipient of advertising and, you know, just new products being shoved in your face every other day and things like that. And it's just different, you know, it's different and it's good and bad because the result of it is there's fresh content all the time in terms of new products and new toys to play with and new cards to look at. And for some of us, that's exciting to see and evaluate new spoilers and new leaks and new secret layers and things. But for others, I think we'd rather that effort goes into, you know, those events and those opportunities to play competitively with the pieces that we have and just those efforts to just make the competitive scene healthy. And you know, it's just different. It's a different perspective on things. And obviously, you know, one of them has a little bit more of a price tied to it, or one of them more financial outcomes tied to it than the other.
Well, I mean, so let's kind of, you know, we've given our opinions on it. Let's wrap the podcast with the legitimate question here. Yeah. You know, money being no object, you are Jeff Bezos. You have all of the dollars. You know, what version of this do you like the most? Do you want to go back to the way it was pre-pandemic, knowing that there might be some of those pandemic-related considerations still hanging about? Do you like this post-pandemic world? Do you want to see, like, we can't control what Wizards does with Pro Tours and all that. So, like, ignoring all that, do you want to go back to the pre-pandemic world of how Magic was played? And, you know, the travel is a cost that, you know, you say it's more expensive with new products. You know, even if they limited the old products, the traveling for in-person play would be a cost. So it's like, do you want to go to that, back to this? Do you like the digital world? Like, what? Do you want, you know, half and half? Do you want to keep some, leave some? Like, if money was no object in how you engaged, like, what would be your engagement? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I think it's tough. I think a lot of us have aged with the game, right? So, like, we kind of have a different perspective on, like, what we want out of it, too. Like, we're all growing up, and, like, what we can invest into it, like, from a time perspective is different. When I was younger and, like, in college or, like, fresh out of college, like, the ability to, like, spend weekends, like, traveling for events was, like, more readily available than it is now. Like, you know, people are working. They have families. Like, this game, like, I always looked around the room and I was like trying to like figure out the average age of the players around me, and I was like, yeah, they're like about my age. And I would always say that, like, yeah, they're about my age, you know what I mean? And nowadays it's, yeah, like the players that are playing this game are like younger and younger. It's like there's kids that are involved in this game, and that's great. Like, kids can access Magic the Gathering because it is available to them, right? It wasn't always available to them when it was a competitive oriented game. Because it was like the barrier to entry was just so high. Like, you had to like get involved on this really competitive level. You had to have like the income to like build a deck. You had to pay like $35 to get into a tournament. You had to be able to travel to that tournament, and you had to be able to commit to 2 full days of playing in that tournament. It was like a big deal. Like, and I'm talking about like the Star City Games tournaments, but even like a local store tournament, it was like a 10-hour commitment sometimes. You know what I mean? Even just like 30.
Yeah, no. Seven rounds, cut to top eight, 50 minutes plus time extensions and stuff. You're looking at, yeah, you know, an hour and 10 minutes around. You're looking at, you know, a whole day. 12
even
hours.
Like, even like a Friday night Magic is not a casual environment. Like, let's be real. Like, you can bring like a friendly deck to a Friday night Magic thinking that you're just going to be able to like play like your the standard deck you threw together, and you'll get like trounced and like not have a good time and probably not want to come back. Like, you have to like go and like net deck to like have a chance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I can see the advantage to this new world of Magic, and I can see why this is like probably like better for more people. You know what I mean? But
well,
I guess
what's your preference?
This is it's tough to say. You know what I'm saying? Like, what I miss personally is I miss the opportunities to go and do those things that I look fondly back on. But I can see some value to, like, I'm a teacher and I can see my students like playing this game, and I don't think that's ever something I ever experienced even like 6 years ago when I was teaching, because like my kids didn't like even really know about Magic or like couldn't really get into the game. But now like there are tons of kids that play this game, and that's great to see.
Wow, you politicked it there, because I literally asked you, how do you want to interact with Magic the Gathering? And you kissed babies and said you weren't a crook and didn't even answer the question. So I'll answer the question.
All right,
how do I want to interact with Magic? And I got married. I became a stepfather. I have two teenagers. I work 50 hours a week. I have a wife that I love and like to spend time with. I took up golfing in the pandemic because I wanted to go outside and have some sort of competitive outlet that didn't involve me sitting on my butt all day, because I got kind of fat during the pandemic, fatter than I was. All that being said, that's a lot of stuff in my life. I don't have the time anymore to go and carve out a weekend to like go and play in a Magic tournament. Even if you told me, hey, you can win $5,000. Like, and you're going to be well prepared and you're going to be one of the top 10% of the people in the room. And so you got to run good and, you know, get lucky a few times and you can win a tournament. There's just a bazillion other things I'd rather do with that. You know, I don't get 12 hours to myself at all. Mm-hmm. I can get two, maybe one.
Yeah.
But that's it. So like for me, the online experience of like, I can play a league and I can, you know, if I owned the cards, you know, I'm Bezos. I own all the cards. Like, I can launch my league. I can play a game on my lunch break. I can play a game while my wife goes to the store and my daughter goes with her. I can, you know, play two games before bed if I don't have some downtime and I'm not, like, watching a show with my daughter or wife or eating dinner or whatever or cleaning. And I can consume my Magic content that way and play in a little tournament. And, you know, maybe I could make time to play in one of those $30 or $40 tournaments where, you know, I put my buy-in in. If I O2 drop, guess what? I O2 drop in my clothes, in my house, and I can just go about my day instead of driving 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, 2 hours to a tournament, putting my $40 in, O2 dropping, and then having to wait for my friends to finish, or if I went alone, to drive back the 2 hours and, you know, lose all the travel time. So for me, the digital experience is superior to where I am in life right now. And I like it. I dislike that I don't get to see my friends. Like, would I like to have a reason to hang out with you in real life and play Magic for, you know, a week and shoot shit and all that? Absolutely. I would love to hang out with people. I would love to figure out some way to make the digital portion similar to where I can, like, play in a tournament with a bunch of people that I know and, like, we'll have a Discord or, like, a Skype chat or something and just, like, have it be a social thing of how we're doing or, you know, what's happening. That's really hard to get going. So like people don't really do that. So for me, the consumption of the program itself is going to be the digital realm because it is so much friendlier on my time. But I do look back fondly and miss the times where we packed into cars and drove to different states and ate shitty convention center food and hyped each other up. And like that was awesome. It was a part of my life that I'll no longer do again, probably. And I'll miss it. But I think that for me, the pandemic shifting all of the competitiveness to the digital medium works better for my life.
Yeah, it's probably, I mean, that's got to be true for most people. And like I said, like the game has aged with us. Like our crowd is the same crowd that it was, you know, when we were in college. It was the same people that were doing that in college. But, and I think largely those are the people that like grew up with the game. And there have been people that have like learned it and come and gone along the way. But the people that are starting in the game now are like a younger group of people that are like engaging with video games and stuff. And so like this arena environment is maybe a little bit more familiar to them anyway. So it's not like they have this like hunger for like going to the convention center and like playing these tournaments. But the thing that I'm disappointed in is that like, maybe they would love that. Like I want them to have those experiences. Cause like those people, like they're going to grow up to the age where like they might have like the means and the capacity and the time to do those types of things. And like, we were looking back fondly on those times and saying like, oh man, remember when we stayed up too late for like the midnight pre-releases? Like, man, wouldn't that be great for like my son to like, you know, go through that and like drink too much Mountain Dew and like be an idiot and like do like 3 pre-releases in a row and get no sleep on the weekend? Like, yeah, it's dumb, but it was a hell of a lot of fun. And like, remember all the stories we have, like going to Perkins at like 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but anyways, I think that's the kind of like the fun, like camaraderie aspect of the game that like, I think is really lost on the whole, like when you're sitting on arena and someone's just blasting like good game, good game, good game emojis at you or whatever the hell that you can choose from. It's like, that stuff sucks. Like all the toxic conversations that replace the, like the fun, like interacting with people that you could have face to face. Like that's bullshit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Unfortunately, it's like the opposite of the positive experience that you have, but at the cost of just accessibility and like, you know, the ability to just do it whenever you want to. So hopefully we can find some middle ground in all of that, and there's some value to like going to the store for some FNM still. And I know stores still kind of struggle to get those things off the ground at times, but there's still plenty of LGSs that they still have flourishing FNM experiences and whatnot. But I guess my word for all of you is to go out and take advantage of those if you can.
Absolutely.
All right, well, on that, I think we better wrap up. I know we talked about mentioning something about historic, but I think with that conversation, I don't know if it's totally appropriate to talk about arena historic right now. I'll just say that I've been having some fun with it.
Yeah.
We'll cover that next time.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, cool. Thanks, Daryl.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Peace out, everybody.
All right, bye.
Modern Metacall is a production of CarKnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with CardKnockLife offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardKnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading CardKnockLife content.